To what extent does self-control simply flow from a changed heart? Or does it involve blood, sweat, and tears as we grapple with temptations, passions, and people who irritate us? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on the fruit of the Spirit, and our topic for today is self-control. Conversation partners are two colleagues, Walla Walla University School of Theology, Eileen Bauer and Bruce Johansson. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, let's focus in on that question I just raised. Self-control. Does it flow naturally, or is it something that you have to work at and it can be improved?
Alden, I have never heard a sermon on this fruit of the Spirit.
You never have?
No. I've heard them on the others, but not at Encratea.
Yeah, because preachers don't have enough self-control.
So if you were going to preach one, what would you say?
Oh, now you put me on the spot.
Now, Bruce, you were mentioning that this has a rich background in the culture.
It does.
Maybe
in the Greek culture, especially.
In the Greek culture. Maybe you could tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. In Greek culture, you find that if you are influenced by the Stoics and even by the Epicureans, this is one of the primary qualities that you seek. To have control over your appetites, whatever they may be, material, sexual, you name it.
Did the Greeks give you help for how to arrive at that?
Yeah. Yeah, you just control yourself.
You just control yourself.
Yeah.
So it wasn't great.
You discipline yourself.
Just by blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah. And you'll have these rich men who will support a Stoic philosopher to come and and sort of fly the whip. And it's a little bit humorous because the Stoic philosopher lives quite well off of the rich man while he applies the whip, and they got a bad reputation for it. It's something that a dualistic worldview pushes in the direction of asceticism. And asceticism where you harm the body in order to achieve self-control is not biblical.
Well, even the list of fruit of the Spirit, there's not a strong ascetical element there. It's a much more buoyant, healthy experience, I would say.
Let me put it this way.
Okay.
There's a common recognition that if you don't practice self-control, you can harm yourself. And so it can be a self-preservation sort of a thing, and we've all learned that, you better manage your passions and your emotions, otherwise life is going to kick you pretty hard. So there's a kind of a very common sense thing about it, and we all practice that more or less.
Yeah.
But I think the self-control here is driven by a deeper concern, and that is you don't just harm yourself, you harm other people. The gospel is always rooted in how we relate to God and how we relate to other people. And if I'm out of control, I hurt my family, I hurt my friends, I hurt my community, and that is unacceptable from a Christian point of view.
You know, interestingly enough, even Adventists have been very much concerned about individual health, and some of you may have seen the U.S. News and World Report, 10 Secrets How to Live a Long Life. One of them is live like a Seventh-day Adventist. In one sense, I'm a bit chagrined that we have been known simply for living a long life. Because if you read, Ellen White's concept, the only reason why you take care of your health, or the primary reason why you take care of your health, so that you can help others.
Yes.
Yeah.
If your body is strong and healthy,
then
you can do more good.
Yes.
Put it another way, how can you be nice to your family if your stomach is in an uproar?
Right.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So self-control has some real benefits for ourselves, but the whole point is we take care of ourselves so that we can love others. In other words, you love others as you love yourself, which implies...
The motive is different than in the ancient culture, but also I think you mentioned it's something you do yourself, where what Paul is saying here is I give you the reason and the hope that it can be accomplished.
Yes.
You know, the spirit is there.
Now, let me press you again, Bruce, on this. You said that the Greeks just did it by brute force and energy. for Christians, self-control. If you were reading a Christian manual on how to develop self-control, how would it differ from a Greek manual?
Pray without ceasing.
A sense of God's ongoing presence. Is
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. If you're not connected, there's a sense where you are self-preservative.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's good. That's not bad.
Yeah.
And so you learn how to control yourself so that you don't reap damage. But, you know, when it turns to other people, we all look after ourselves, but then we need to look after. That doesn't come always so naturally with us. It's natural to look out for myself. And if I don't stay plugged in, if I don't keep connected, if I don't have the channels open for the Spirit, you know, the Spirit is a wonderful thing. In Romans 5, Paul says, it is through the Holy Spirit that God's love is poured into our mm-hmm. hearts.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that kind of divine love doesn't come naturally.
Yeah.
And I think it's in that kind of context.
And I think it's not a one-time thing. That's
no.
an I die daily.
Oh,
I am
absolutely.
Filled daily. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, even when it comes to prayer, and I think this is absolutely, you're absolutely right, Bruce, when you talk about praying without ceasing. I experimented this when our girls were little, you know, and they didn't quarrel very often. But when they did, I would say things like, you know, I'll ask Jesus to help you. And then I begin wondering, what was I expecting Jesus to do? You know, come down here with a giant syringe and give some help. No, I finally decided, ask Jesus to help you and remember that you asked. And this comes back again to the very natural way of doing it. If I am sincerely praying for you, Bruce, and I mean sincerely praying for you, not in the nasty sense, I'll be praying for you.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But in the sincere sense, it's going to be very difficult for me to be nasty to you.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so it's remembering that we have prayed, this praying without ceasing, that enables us to give the self-control.
Mm. So.
It's interesting you said that, because when Paul opens his thanksgivings in his letters, he says, I give thanks to God for you. Remembering is the next participle that comes along. And then he goes on to praying. So giving thanks, remembering, praying.
Mm.
It's interesting what you said there. There's a dynamic there that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, you know, in my life, one place where I can pray without ceasing most easily is when I play racquetball, because the only two things you have time to pray and play in the game. See? And it's also a wonderful game because this is the one place where the Christian is mandated by the rules of the game to be deceptive. So it's great.
Oh.
But I remember we had one of our graduates, he was a minister, who had a hard time controlling his temper.
Mm.
And we finally said, we're going to have prayer at the beginning, on the court. See? But he finally quit coming. He says it didn't do any good.
Yeah.
But I still believe that if he had remembered that he had prayed,
if
you really are in a spirit of prayer, then you don't lose your cool. See, so now, there is one other aspect that I would like to deal with here. Well, there are several. Let me deal with, first of all, the two stories that are intriguing here, mentioned in the study guide. Joseph and Samson.
Hmm.
Example of one man who had self-control in the face of temptation, and the other one who had no self-control. What made the difference?
Well, in the story of Joseph, doesn't he say, how can I do this thing and sin against God?
Yeah.
And I think it had to do with the relationship with God before the temptation came.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to me that there needs to be kind of a sense of horror when we go against that which is holy, that which is right.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is that Potiphar's wife was a fairly attractive woman. There was a natural attractiveness then, but immediately in the life of the believer, there is this counterbalancing sense of horror that says, no, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
I think that is the primary, that must be the primary center of focus for self-control to take place. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, that as you live a little bit longer in life, you see the outcomes where you didn't have self-control.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that anger, you know, uncontrolled sexual desire, uncontrolled eating, all of those things, look at the damage.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where the remembering also can come in and help us. Do I really want to go there? Now, when somebody was angry with me, that's what it did to me. Can I really get mad and just let fly at this person? There, I think a process of remembering can be very, very remedial. And then maybe that will force you back to rely on God, because you know that in and of yourself, it's probably a hopeless game.
Yeah.
And this is where I think that you can learn something from athletics. At least I've made this application. If you want to play tennis, you need to practice so that the ball, if you are disciplined and you practice at it, then the ball goes where you want it to go. This comes by practice. And the more you practice, the more reliable, the more consistent it is. So these habit patterns are established.
Yeah.
Likewise in self-control.
Yeah.
Once you establish the pattern,
it gets better.
It gets better.
Yeah.
Well, and Paul uses the athletic term, too, for a walk. So.
Yes, that's right. Now, let's take a look at the we don't have time to talk about Samson. I'm not sure if we understand what was going on there. Just get her for
me. The sad thing was that there he finally did something, but it cost him his life. He did something that was good, that helped the side of good.
But it was immediate gratification. Get her for me. She pleased me well. He just had no sense of any kind of self-control.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, what I'd like to do is to look at the list of works of the flesh in Galatians. And I've just spelled them out here. I don't know whether you would agree with my assessment, but I put them into four different categories. There are the ones that are specifically sexual passions, fornication, impurity. It seems to me those are largely focused on the sexual life. Then those I would put in the category of wild living with potential sexual overtones, licentiousness, drunkenness, carousing. Then more specifically religious issues, idolatry, sorcery. And then those that I've just put under the heading of interpersonal combativeness.
Yes.
Enmity, strife, jealousy, anger, quarrels, dissensions, factions, envy.
Yeah.
That's where the weight comes on.
Yes, it does. Yeah. So often when we think of flesh, we think of only the sexual.
That's right.
Yeah.
Whereas actually it's the whole gamut and much more the interrelational one.
Yes, in fact, that is what you precisely what you find in chapter 5 where it starts.
Yeah.
When I discovered this, it was a year ago that I saw this clearly. It just blew me away. For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love become slaves to one another.
Yes.
The opposite of flesh is taking care of other people.
Yes.
And then he quotes, "But the whole law is fulfilled in a single commandment. You shall love your neighbor."
Yeah.
Boy, that just plays.
Yeah, and it's interesting, though, that he says, don't become a slave to these things of the flesh, but you do become a slave to others.
Others,
so there is a bit of a paradox there.
And if we take lifestyle issues and say anything which makes it more difficult for me to love you or makes your life more difficult, that is a sin of the flesh. And so all this long list here is really...
And it's interesting, though, he also says, and such things, so it's not even a
it's
complete
not that.
List.
Yeah.
Things like these.
Yeah, things like these. Such
we can
things.
Make a longer list, he's saying.
So this isn't it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, our time is virtually up. I want to thank our conversation partners, Elise and Bruce, for your help. And next week, we will be talking about righteousness. We're moving now beyond the list in Galatians, but there are still fruit to talk about, so next week we'll talk about righteousness. My thanks to Michael White, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson. One of the pieces of good news about the Good Word is that you can listen to it again if you want. You can go to the Positive Life Radio website, plr.org, under Programs, listed Good Word. There you can tap in. And you can listen to your heart's content. You can also order a CD for it. All of that is available at the PLR.org Positive Life Radio website.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.